Kirsten.
Richard Werber, Darren.
And we are Perd Kirsten. Hello, at Darren Listenerland. The internet.
What?
The internet.
It's many things. I don't think it's well known for its listening.
It's a series of tubes. The sound gets caught, I guess.
I guess that's how it works. I've learned a lot about sound engineering in making this show. I have not yet learned about the tubes. Welcome to Prefer Not To, weekly sometime cocktail hour.
Always cocktail hour.
With your hosts, Josh and Kate. I'm not Kate.
I'm not Josh.
Every week, Kate and I have a cocktail, watch some movies, talk about them, then move on to talk about whatever bits of culture happen to float through our transom. How you doing, Kate?
I'm good.
What are we drinking this week?
We're having champagne cocktails.
Let's have us a champagne jam.
All right, let's clink. Can we get a good, like, clinking sound effect or second? Okay.
Regular Frank and Sadie Doyle.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. It's a very sweet beverage, wouldn't you say?
It is.
Okay, so, it's not for the light of heart. If someone wants something sweet and bubbly, I would go with this. This is not a... You can tell, so this is actually one of the most famous cocktails in old school Hollywood. That's where it got a lot of its glamour from and popularity. So you can imagine that someone would feel very glamorous drinking this.
People who wanted something to drink at a champagne occasion, but that also had hooch in it.
Yeah, exactly. So a champagne cocktail is made of one sugar cube, 2 to 3 dashes of bitters. I've seen some recipes that say 4 bitters. That seemed a little bit too much. Mm-hmm. An ounce of brandy, and of course, champagne. The addition of brandy is interesting because some people are like very strict about it. It has to be just champagne and sugar. And then some people
I don't think it's a cocktail if it doesn't have liquor in it.
Well, and then it's also the brandy I think cuts the sweetness. So
I don't know, I think the brandy adds the sweetness.
Well, I like the brandy.
I do too. I'm just saying I think it contributes to the sweetness.
And then of course you have your very fancy lemon peel wedge curly Q thing that goes into inside the glass, but you can also add orange slices and cherries, which a lot of cocktails, it's like, let's just throw a lime in there and see what happens.
Sure. It's all because, you know, fruit people need money. So how'd this cocktail come to happen?
So the cocktail appeared sometime between the prehistoric period, between the invention of the cocktail.
So sometime between late Neolithic man and today.
I'm quoting from Esquire. This is actually one of the top 10 drinks of the year.
You realize we can't just quote wholesale from other publications.
I'm not. Okay, fine. Fine. Never mind. It first appeared in 1862, Josh.
During the American Civil War. Was this in America?
Yes.
Okay. So what's the story?
So the father of American mixology, Jerry, a.k.a. Jeremiah P. Thomas, wrote a book called How to Mix Drinks or The Bon Vivant's Companion, which was the first published anything in America that had to deal with like cocktails. It's like a collection of oral... Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like to think of you as the Bon Vivant's Companion.
Aww. It was a collection of oral histories about what makes cocktails, famous cocktails from around the country. Mm-hmm. And this is what the first print, I guess.
So this is an American book.
Yes, it's an American book. It's still available.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool. So he, like I said, Jerry, I'm gonna call him Jerry for the rest of this, was the father of American mixology. He was born in 1830. He founded a bunch of bars across America. His most famous one is on Broadway.
So he was like Jerry Barseed.
I guess you could say that. I also think that the champagne cocktail is interesting just because among all of the, and I'm going to quote from Esquire here.
Just saying, like, with fair use. You can't just wholesale read another person's article.
I'm not.
Okay.
I'm just, can I quote? Is that something I can do?
That's within fair use. It's not me. It's, you know, I just don't want to get us sued.
What's more, practically alone among all the cocktails, punches, smashes, juleps, flips, cobblers, and such like collected by Professor Jerry Thomas for his Bon Vivant's Companion, the champagne cocktail has come down to us unchanged.
Huh.
I think it's interesting because we also talking about a lot of our other cocktails about how, well, it was traditionally made with rye whiskey and then there was, I just think it's like champagne and sugar and brandy. Maybe.
And bitters, although there weren't even bitters at this point, were there? Because we talked about the development of Angostura bitters last week.
Yeah.
Or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. It's also, like I said, notable. It was very popular among the golden age of Hollywood stars, Clark Gable, Marilyn Monroe. It was in a lot of films at the time.
So how did the idea come? I want to back up a little bit. How did the idea, because, you know, usually wine people, especially the French wine people, very particular about their wine. And like, I would think adulterating wine would be regarded as something of a sacrilege.
Well, again, in the, if you're a purist, if you're a, like, people are like, don't get a champagne, don't use champagne, use sparkling white wine. which, you know, champagne is a very specific type of
sparkling wine. So use something shitty.
Yeah, use something shitty if you're
like with
you
a mimosa.
Don't,
like
don't mess with champagne. You're going to ruin it. You know, mm-hmm. and the same idea where, you know, you get people who are serious cocktail drinkers are like, why would you add champagne to anything?
Right.
You know.
Right. Or, you know, the people who are like, why would you use good liquor in this cocktail that has 18 different pieces of liquor, kinds of liquor in it?
Yes.
You know. So, and we were talking about how the changes in champagne might have prompted this, because champagne, as the course of the 19th century went on, began to get drier.
Yes. That champagne, so this is a very sweet beverage.
Right. At the beginning of the 19th century, champagne was a much sweeter beverage than sort of about mid-century it got drier, and that sort of coincides with this cocktail, which is a sweetening of the champagne itself.
Yeah. I do want to point out that this is the same drink Deborah Carr orders at the boat bar in A Fair to Remember.
You love that movie so much, don't you?
I do. I'm just going to point that out.
What is it that you love about that movie?
What is there not to love about that movie? It's so glamorous. It's mm-hmm. Heartache, the love, the outfits, mm-hmm. the music.
The paraplegia.
The paraplegia. Cary Grant and Deborah Carr have such great mm-hmm. chemistry, and they make a kind of ridiculous plot work. Mm.
Yeah, well, clearly. I mean, the remake didn't work at all, so.
Well, there's a
there's a bunch of remakes, but the one with.
Well, this is a remake of.
Yeah,
of Love Story.
Love, no, not Love Affair.
Love Affair.
Right, not Love,
Love Story.
No. How do I begin?
Love no. means never having to say you're sorry for getting crippled.
No, I meant the remake, the one that was Love Affair again, the one with Warren Beatty
right,
in it.
Right.
Who are appealing and charming people, but that movie was just like a dead fish.
They
on
don't
screen.
Have chemistry together on screen.
Which is crazy, because they've been married long, you know, what, 15 years now?
Yeah.
20 years now?
Yeah.
Which is crazy. I never thought I'd say that about Warren Beatty.
Yeah. It's also ordered by Victor Laszlo and Captain Renault in Casablanca. It's his choice of drink.
You think Warren Beatty and Annette Bening have an open marriage?
That's like, you know, there's a lot of, every time there's a long-term Hollywood marriage, mm-hmm. people, eventually the rumor comes out that they have an open marriage. Like Will Smith
yeah, but I think that's
and
a
Jada
new
Pinkett.
Thing. You never used to hear that. You never used to, that used to, but that's like the new thing is that, oh, they have an open marriage.
Yeah, or they don't get married, like Johnny Depp and...
Kate Moss?
No, Vanessa Paradis, that they were together for like 12 years and they never got married, but now yeah. they broke
now,
up.
Now, didn't he date that the chick who's ostensibly a lesbian?
Who?
What's the hot chick who's a lesbian? The actress. Oh, I can't
Portia
remember.
Portia de Rossi?
No.
She's a hot chick who's a
I
lesbian.
Know, but she's not the one I'm thinking of, because obviously I know who that is. You know, she's younger than that. He dated someone very much younger than him who is gay. Ostensibly. I don't know.
Anne Heche?
No.
I don't know.
Everyone listening is yelling at their freaking iPod right now.
What have they been in?
Things made after I went into my Rip Van Winkle.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I just don't think you could get married to Warren Beatty and not expect him to have affairs.
That's like Michael Douglas, man. All that throat cancer you got from...
From butt? You got throat cancer in the butt, cancer in the throat?
No, he got cancer. You didn't hear about this?
Yeah, he claimed that he got HPV in his mouth.
Yeah, which right. I was just like, okay, Michael Douglas.
Right. And then you hear about, and then I just read this the other day, Samuel Jackson's been married to the same woman for 32 years.
Yeah.
33 years.
Now you remember that Siri ad where he's like, tonight's date night, and he's using Siri to help get
that
ready?
That is so cute.
Isn't it cute?
And they like, he like had no career for a long time. He didn't have a career until like Jungle Fever, which is what, like 1996, something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they got married early on.
Yeah, he has a bit part on...
Yeah, I mean, he has little bit things here and there, but yeah. like his first role of notice, I think, was... I'm going to be recommending a movie with Samuel Jackson at it in our recommendations this week.
Is it Pulp Fiction?
No, it is not. Like you had to ask. God, you are getting flushed. This cocktail really got you, went to your head. Is it true about bubbles? Like some girls say, like, ooh, the bubbles, they make it go to my head. Is that a myth?
I think I found that different types of alcohol make me feel different ways. Like mm-hmm. wine is very relaxing, whereas gin is like, let's party!
Well, I mean, wine does have the flushing thing because of the sulfites,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Although, that may or may not also be true.
And then vodka is just, you know, when you want to go out and out, you drink vodka. I don't know.
It's been so long since I was a kid in college.
Shut,
you know what my my favorite drinking game is now as an adult, Kate? The one where I drink until I've had enough to drink and then I stop drinking. I love that game. You know why? I always win.
My favorite drinking game is drinking wine while watching TV and then going to bed.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of TV shows.
Or while playing Warcraft. Yes.
Speaking of TV shows you watch while you're drinking wine, what do you think of the Doctor Who? Oh, you haven't watched it yet.
I haven't seen it yet. I
Why saw didn't the you watch it?
Because I was sad yesterday, and I didn't want to... I had a feeling that it was going to
be... You usually watch Doctor Who while you're sad.
Yeah, but I just had this feeling it was going to be heartbreaking and bring up a bunch of new emotions.
It actually wasn't heartbreaking. It was actually very life-affirming, and it ended up.
Yeah.
It's good.
And then, you know, and I watched the...
And had Fourth Doctor cameo at the end, which I loved.
Aren't they all in it?
Nah. They're all in it, like, in fake silhouette, like they're doing. But the only doctors who are in it
are... They're all coming back for... No, wait, this is the 50th. Yeah.
The only doctors who are in it are the current one and Tennant, and then John Hurt, who they do his story on, and then Fourth Doctor's in it at the end.
John Hurt. Okay.
Oh, and 13 is in it for, like, half a second.
Oh, yeah.
12. He calls himself 13 now, apparently. But Peter Capaldi's in it for, like, a half a second. What else did we watch this week?
The movies.
Yeah, no, I'm going to get to the movies. Do you want to get to the movies now?
No,
I'm
just,
like,
what
so
else?
Super eager.
I mean,
to
what
get
did we
movie.
Watch? Vampire Diaries. Which,
yeah,
ooh.
That show, I don't... It seems like, and again, I am not that... Let me preface this. For you people who are not fans of Vampire Diaries, I am not either. So I really only pick up on little ephemera while Kate is watching it, while I'm around the house doing housewife stuff. And even to me, who has not grasped this, first of all, here's the thing about the Vampire Diaries.
Haven't we talked about this before?
No. Every episode of the Vampire Diaries would be about 8 minutes shorter if they cut out all of the dialogue that was just pure exposition of people saying, well, if I weren't a vampire that was half werewolf who became the conduit between the land of the dead and the living, I wouldn't have had to get the shard from the land of the nether regions. Like, well, there's about 8 to 10 minutes worth of that dialogue in every episode of the show. Then there's another 7 minutes that's just, like, pointless musical montages. Like, that show, more than any other show on TV, makes me, like, think that the Dogma 95 people, the filmmakers who are like, we're not going to use any incidental music, we're not going to use where it's all location shoots, making has to, because it's, like, a bunch of manipulative pop music and exposition. That's about 20 minutes of every show.
I don't know if you've ever watched Grey's Anatomy, but it's way worse about the music and the slow-mo and the everything like that. And I do want to point out that as a Vampire Diary fan, they are so... They just move at breakneck speed when it comes to plot. Mm-hmm. They churn through it like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So I would argue that that's almost necessary to... Even if you're a faithful watcher like me, I'm like, oh yeah, Bonnie is now the conduit between
worlds.
Well,
when you have characters who are all interchangeable and so poorly drawn, then I guess you do have to chew through plot. Anyhow, recently there were, like, three of this one character and three of another character, and they're now down to one and one, right? They've killed off the clones. Okay, how many clones are left?
They're not clones. They're, like, doppelgangers.
Okay,
and
clone.
Do you want to... Joss Whedon... Buffy does musical cues
all
the time.
Here's the difference. That was 20 years ago. It was new then.
I think most TV shows do that.
Yeah, they didn't at the time. You want to know the first
in
show?
In the
that,
mid-90s,
you want to know
the
first show that did?
Me?
You want to know the first show that really did that?
Was Dawson's Creek.
Miami Vice. Miami Vice was the first show that really sort of incorporated legit popular music that they had acquired the royalties to do the storyline. Because you get, no, seriously, this is a fun fact. When I was a kid and you would watch shows like Miami Vice, I mean, not like Miami Vice, but before Miami Vice, like The A-Team or Knight Rider or... just tell you what kind of kid I was. The A-Team or Knight Rider or like Magnum P.I. if they had... A song on there that was like a popular song from the day. Mm-hmm. They had these clone bands would do the songs back in the studio, and like everybody could tell that they were fake, unless it was like mom and dad watching that. Like, that sounds just like Eye of the Tiger. Is that the Survivor band? And it, you know, but then Miami Vice was the first show that really started using the actual stuff and paying royalties for those stuff. And you know, it was a lot. It was groundbreaking in a lot of ways, but that was one of the big ones.
I don't pretend that I don't watch shitty TV. I just know that I'm a fan of it.
You watch this actually dovetails with a topic that we're going to hit later on that was brought to our attention by a letter to the editor writer
about
guilty pleasures.
Oh, yeah. All
so
right.
Save that for when we do our guilty pleasures discussion later
Can
in the
do.
Show. You want to move on to screen time?
Yep.
Okay.
So now it's time for Screen Time, a weekly feature in which Josh and I do pick a number. Well, we don't pick it. We go to random.org and pick a random number from
You know, if we were smart, we would have found someone commercial to sponsor our randomness instead of this .org.
We pick a number from 1 to 25 and coordinate that year, that number to a year in our lives, and watch the number one movie in America for that week. So this time we got 12 again, which seems to be a very popular number.
We're getting a lot of numbers from the mid-80s slash early 2000s.
Yeah, so yeah. My movie was Charlie's Angels and
from
Josh.
From the year 2000.
From the year 2000, and Josh's was 1985's Death Wish 3.
This time it's... 3.
Death Wish year.
Right. So who's going to go first?
You can go.
So Death Wish 3, first of all, if you've seen any other Death Wish movies, and maybe you have, maybe you haven't, Charles Bronson's character is basically a man whose life becomes single-minded in the pursuit of vigilantism in all its forms. In the first two movies, he's hunting down the men who raped and murdered his entire family. In the third one, having run out of people on which to exact his revenge, he shows up in New York looking for a friend of his from the war, and it turns out that that friend is being shaken down by a neighborhood gang, and I use the word gang in the loosest, most Jackie Chan Rumble in the Bronx sense. This is a multi-ethnic, multi-aged group of people whose sum total of gang-related activity appears to be, like, making fun of old people on their way home from the grocery store and stealing hubcaps and apparently some sort of shakedown racket, although we never actually see them shaking someone down for protection.
Well, no, they're shaking down his friend.
Right, but after that, it's like apparently they've decided not to, because we don't ever see them do that again, do we?
Who are they protecting the neighborhood from?
Well, no, that's how a protection racket works. Uh-uh. Oh, you're so naive. You know, the protection racket is not, we're not actually protecting you, it's, you know, nice business there, shame if something happened to it.
No, that's I know, but I'm just, works.
Anyhow, so there's this gang led by Chuck Cunningham. For those of you who are fans of Happy Days, you're wondering where the lost Cunningham brother, Chuck Cunningham, played by Gavin O'Hurley, went after those first 8 episodes of the first season. Apparently, fell on some hard times, went to New York, big city, because how are you going to keep him down in Milwaukee after they've seen the bright lights of New York, rose to prominence in a street gang. So good on you, Chuck Cunningham. Although I think he actually technically went off to the war or some shit.
I don't know.
I'm sure there's some, like, fan fiction site where they explain what happened. I didn't mean, like, kinky sex. Why does you always go to kinky sex when I say fan fiction? Because everyone does, I know.
This podcast brought to you by fanfiction.net.
Is that a real sign?
Yeah.
Don't ask me. I don't want to know.
I used to write fanfiction.
I know
for
you did.
Site.
I don't want to. These, you know what? These are things I don't want to know about you. Okay.
But you already know that I wrote fanfiction.
I can. There's a lot of things I don't want to know about people that I know. Okay. I don't want to know that my parents skipped a chance to see Ike and Tina because they were only actually interested in seeing the main act, the Righteous Brothers. Fun fact, right? I don't want to know that my parents walked out on the original production of Sweeney Todd because it was too hot in the Winter Garden Theater or wherever it was.
You're really caught up on things your parents didn't
do.
Yeah,
things I don't want to know about them. Absolutely. You know, and I don't want to know that you wrote erotic fanfic.
Only one.
Okay, well, good.
Then one that is extremely apocryphal given the events of...
I don't want to know.
All right, sorry.
I don't want to know. So Chuck Cunningham and his impressively multi-ethnic gang, and I have to give him points for diversity recruitment, are, like I said, hassling old people as they buy groceries, hassling Martin Balsam, who runs a successful clock repair shop in the midst of the slum,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, if there's one thing that folks in the slum need, it's a reliable timepiece to make it to their important... engagements, and that's why that's the last business to close.
You get the sense that he moved there when it was, like, new and...
Yeah, but it makes no sense that, like, everything else around him is... It's not just that there's, like, the businesses around him are struggling. It's he's the only business, and everything else around him is, like, rubble.
Well, there's the grocery store.
Right, that's true.
That they harass old people.
That they harass the old people out of. Well, that's where their business comes from. I bet they pay the Koreans, like, hey, you know, we won't burn your store down if you let us harass the old people.
Yeah.
Anyhow, so through a series of ever-escalating munitions, Charles Bronson discharges truly stupefying amounts of ordnance on, you know, largely innocent people with the tacit approval of the police department, who say, at one point, I want you to bring me bodies on slabs in the morgue. I mean, this is, and again, there's this, that's the whole plot. It's, like, hard to even break this story into story breaks because it really is just, well, there's, like, several other plot elements in that Counselor Troy gets gang raped.
It's one of, I guess, maybe one of her, Marina Sears just has a very bit part as the wife of one of Charles Bronson's buddies who...
No, just like somebody who lived in the building.
Right, but then they become buddies because then they fight the gangs together.
Right, and the gang, which, by the way, had not shown any willingness or desire or history at group sexual violence in this movie. Again, literally, we've seen them stealing hubcaps or, like, stealing parts out of a car and harassing old people on the way, and like sitting on stoops looking menacing like those kids do with their rock and roll. And that's the other thing, like this movie, the gang members are clearly painted from the imagination of someone who has no experience obviously with actual street gangs, because they're, you know, weird and multi-ethnic and multi-aged, but also it's this pastiche of things that would have scared like a 40-something suburbanite in 1985 about popular culture. Like some of them have sort of punky mohawk hair, and others of them are break dancing, and others of them have weird makeup where they have like a lightning bolt on their face and stuff.
Yeah, and some of them are basically just wearing leather jackets lifted straight from the Beat It video.
Right, and then others of them look like they're out of like Mad Max or something. It's like, it's basically just this, it really is just a pastiche of things that, you know, you have seen in other popular culture and that has created in your head, this is what gang violence looks like. So after Counselor Troy gets gang raped in a really exploitative, and I think those of you who listen to the show regularly don't need to hear me say it one more time, but, you know, using sexual violence as a way to up the ante in your story is the most hacky and bullshit and easy way to get me to hate you instantly, because it is a completely manipulative and non-helpful story element. And it just pisses me off and it makes you want to, I hate it. It literally, you've seen me watch movies. Like, the minute that, like, rape is used as a plot element, fuck you. Fuck you,
How
movie.
Would you rather rape be used as, like, a plot element? Like, it is a plot. It would
this
be
was
a character development.
This was a character who we had no experience with except for her being the worm on the end of a rape hook, okay?
Do those exist? Rape hooks?
You know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, no, I know.
She existed in this story to be raped.
Yes, I know.
Okay? The women in this movie, by the way, there's an old Jewish woman who is played for comedy because she owns a gun. There's Counselor Troy, who exists to get raped. And there's a prostitute who ends up getting shot.
And there is the lady from...
Oh, the lady friend, right.
The anthropologist,
right, who exists to have a pointless love scene with Charles Bronson that's kind of creepy. Yeah.
And then dies in a flaming car wreck.
Oh, she also gets killed. Right. She exists to get murdered. Which plays into my basic analysis of this movie, which is, this movie is fascist. It is fascist in every element of its being, in which its core argument is that all that matters in society is who is able to exert the most force against someone else, and they will determine what's right, and all you can do is hope that it's Charles Bronson and not Chuck Cunningham. It is sort of so nakedly fascist, and there was a brief window in the mid-80s when you could have a sort of just nakedly fascist movie like this. Like this, like Red Dawn, you know, is a pretty nakedly fascist movie.
We gotta fight the commies somehow,
well,
Josh.
You know, I love fighting commies, don't get me wrong. But nowadays, movies have a sort of, like, they cloak their authoritarian impulses in this sort of fig leaf of respectable upper-middle-class liberal values. You know, like Armageddon, they're going to save the moon, or Avatar. Like, it's all environmentalism, man. We're not just taking delight in the killing of other people. We're taking delight because we're saving the planet, you know? Or, like even Iron Man, okay? Iron Man, who is the most, in the Marvel books, the most sort of very securely right-wing, military-industrialist, alcoholic, angry man, becomes in the movies this sort of happy-go-lucky playboy who's learned his lesson and supports, you know, humanist values.
Yeah.
And it's not only fascist in the overt message, but it's fascist in the argumentation that it uses. Because essentially its argument is, the reason that our cities are screwed up is because of the agency of the other. It's these gangs that are making our cities bad. It's not, you know, economic development policies. It's not natural demographic trends. It's not anything else. It's that gang. And if we kill them, we kill the problem.
I just think it's a deliciously horrible movie. I mean, it's on the same level as, like, Troll 2 and
It is truly horrible. And, again, don't let the fact that it is a nakedly fascist movie dissuade you from watching it in its epic horribleness. Because it's Hollywood, we're going to make them multi-ethnic and da-da-da-da-da. But it's young people and their violence and their hair and their drugs and their rock and roll and their stealing of hubcaps.
Sex, yeah.
Right. And their naked sexuality, which is manifested in their desire to rape your wife. Mm-hmm. Are what is wrong with the city. And it's the fascist impulse to identify the other as the source of the problem, A, and B, see physical force as the solution to the problem.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, this is a truly morally repulsive movie that I urge you to see because it is hilarious. So, Kate, any thoughts?
This is going to be very brief.
Okay.
Unlike Josh, I didn't find this movie, like, morally reprehensible, just kind of... I mean, it's just so bad. There's like almost no words.
It is
like,
bad.
It is like,
if it were a better movie, it would be. Its moral positioning would be scarier.
Yeah, but the idea, the fact that it's a bad movie makes it that much more enjoyable. Like, Charles Bronson, you get the sense that he just does not want to be there, and he didn't want to be there. No. Like, he did not like the director.
Let me say that, because here's the thing about Charles Bronson. Charles Bronson was a legitimate war hero. Charles Bronson flew B-29s over Japan in the firebombings of Tokyo. Charles Bronson didn't speak English until he was, like, 10 years old, because he was from, like, Hungary or Ukraine or something.
Hey.
This is a guy who was smart and a war hero. His story, 1,000% more interesting than anything that is in Death Wish 3.
So, yes. I mean, it's just, it's a terrible movie. There's, like, one scene where Marina Sirtis is raped.
Oh,
her
right.
Her husband gets a phone call from the hospital, and he, like, hangs up, and he's like, the doctor says Maria is gonna be all right. And so then they go to the hospital, and they get there, and then the doctor's like, she died.
She died on the table. It's like, was there even a table?
Of internal injuries? Of what? Like, no, they just leave it. And it's used as this, like, cheap motivation for her husband to join Charles Bronson's, like, campaign and everything like that. But it's just so...
It's so
one of
obviously
those...
contrived, because, like, they say she's gonna... First of all, like, the fact that this woman could be gang raped and then 10 seconds later in screen time, they could say, the doctors say she's gonna be all right. They've looked at her brain, and she's not going to have any flashbacks. They've tested for PTSD, and she's going to be A-okay. And then, right, she's not going to wake up screaming in the middle of the night and curse the fact that she was ever born. Thank God. And then they get to the hospital. It's like, oh, we were wrong.
It reminds me of, again, I hate to keep bringing up The Room and Troll 2, but it reminds me a lot of one of the plot developments in The Room, which is that one of the male characters keeps saying he doesn't want to sleep with the main character's girlfriend, but then they keep doing
it. Right, they keep saying, I can't do it, I'm his best friend, and then they do. Then they
and
have
then,
sex.
And then she's like, but I want you, Johnny, and, not Johnny, I want you, Mark, and
right.
Mark, and then that happens, or like, more like in Troll 2, where the dad just says very obvious things all the
right.
time, like, I can't believe you did that. Now let's go to bed. Like, you know.
Yeah. I think this movie, I think we're on the same page.
Goblins.
On this. Outside of the really reprehensible politics, this movie is a sort of lost camp classic that I hope people latch onto, because it is legitimately, I think it is on the order of Troll 2 or The Room
yeah.
or any of the other movies that people watch because they are so spectacularly awful. This, if you know, if you can deal with watching a movie that uses rape as a completely reprehensible plot device, which I completely understand if you aren't, I encourage you to watch it simply because it is awful.
And Martin Balsam is wonderful.
Also, they call everybody creeps. The number of times they use the word creep in this movie, like, we gotta go bust some creeps. We gotta go kill some creeps. I want some creeps on a slab in the morgue. You see those two creeps, what they're doing to your car? Those creeps had their way with your
mugger
wife.
Mugger-rapists.
Right, and then they use the word mugger-rapists. We gotta, oh, with these mugger-rapists. It's like, this movie exists, it's like just some sort of, it's again, and I know I've used this comparison before, but it's like the Mitchell and Webb skit where the writers write this TV show
yeah.
about shit that they have no idea what it
yeah.
actually is. Like, that's what this person who clearly knew jack shit about how cities or gangs or urban violence works, worked on this story. So, that's Death Wish 3. All right, Kate, so what was your movie?
Charlie's Angels from 2000. Mm-hmm. I have a lot less to say about this movie than Death Wish. In this movie, Lucy Liu and Drew Barrymore and Cameron Diaz play the
titular angels.
The titular angels.
Titular.
One of whom who is like a prep school, like expert.
Whatever, they all have various,
origin
stories.
Like, one's a geek and the other one's like
right.
a rebel.
Yeah, it's...
They play the angels who work for Charles Townsend, who mm-hmm. has this like independent spy.
It's like a private detective agency thing, right? It's like it was on the show. But by the way, still voiced by John Forsythe.
Yes. They work for Charlie. So they're called up to investigate the kidnapping of a software engineer named Knox, who is played by Sam Rockwell. They find him fairly easily. Like,
mm-hmm.
the first act of this movie
mm-hmm.
goes by fairly quickly
right.
with a lot of, like, you know, costume changes and
mm-hmm.
slapstick humor and Cameron Diaz doing gymnastics. And he's been kidnapped. The suspect is the head of a rival software company who's played by Tim Curry. And they find him. They talk to him. They debrief. And then Drew Barrymore has sex with him. And then twist, it turns out that Knox was evil the whole time. He arranges to have all of the angels killed, or tries to kill them, and tries to kill Bosley as well by
mm-hmm.
having his
Bosley, who is portrayed by
who's played by Mo Murray. Yeah, so it turns out that Knox was evil the whole time and really just needed the angels to retrieve this like ultra super strong GPS locator thing from Tim Curry's company so he can track down the man he believed to kill his father in the NAM, who turns out to be Charlie.
I get the sense you didn't like this movie. I don't get why you dislike this movie. I don't understand why anybody could dislike this movie. This movie is so, like, pure and open and fun of intent.
Because,
like,
it's just so derivative.
Of course it's derivative. It's a remake
exactly,
of a TV show.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It feels like an extra long TV show special.
It's so frothy, and this is a movie that was, like, designed to be watched on DVD at slumber parties.
Exactly, and I say that's what makes it a bad movie. it's like the Charlie's Angels Christmas,
like,
special.
I legitimately
that's an extra
can't
hour
remember
long.
Any lines from this movie, but all I remember is that every time I watch it, I'm like, everybody who's making this movie was having fun, and they were having fun, and they're not
really
hurting anybody, and it's fun and it's goofy.
You don't remember when Cameron Diaz, like, drop kicks the vice president of the
No,
Rock
I remember
Western
when
Division,
Drew Barrymore said,
"Hey, I really like that guy," because Luke Wilson's in it too.
Right, for some reason. I remember when Drew Barrymore said she was going to moonwalk and then apparently couldn't moonwalk.
Well, but, so, like, ultimately, this is a movie based on a television show. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it feels way too long because it is, like, got that
it's
television
like 90
show.
Minutes.
It still felt too long. That tells you a lot about the fucking movie.
Okay, listen, I would watch this movie 10 times before I watched the Miami Vice movie another twice. Because this movie's fun.
Yeah, but the Miami Vice movie has Kieran Hines in it.
It's a better, I guess, technically, like, a better, but, I, you know, this movie is fun. Not have fun. I am eager to find reasons to not like movies and groan at movies. And basically, the only thing that I groaned at in this movie was at the very beginning when the LL Cool J, like, his first line was like, movie about TV. It's a TV movie.
Basically, this movie is just a stupid popcorn, like, blockbuster movie. Like, and I understand that that's all it was aiming to be and all it was. And I've seen this movie a lot. Like, I was 12 when this came out. I saw it in the theaters. I watched it at sleepovers with my friends. And watching it again as a semi-adult, I'm like, wow, this is just fucking terrible.
Nobody who actually watched the original Charlie's Angels was, like, sincerely interested in the neo-noir gritty stories that it was telling. So it captures the sort of frothy, stupid fun. And again,
that's my problem with it. There's, like, a lot of just kind of, like, costume changes and makeup where, like,
costumes
they're
are neat.
Pretending, like, I mean, I'm being a lot more harsh on this movie than I guess I should, but, like, it was just, it felt so stupid. Maybe it's because I've seen it a lot. I don't know. My main beefs about it is just there's a lot of, like, really pointless bit parts. Like, Crispin Glover is in it and has, like, says nothing. And
a Crispin Glover appearance is never pointless. You may not get the point.
There's
but it's never pointless.
Well, it just feels so 2000s, like early 2000s, because they've got all these, like, bit parts with,
I'm
like,
so old I don't
Matt
even
LeBlanc.
Know what that means. What, like, does it mean?
Matt LeBlanc shows up in it, Tom Green is in it, and you're like, who the fuck had Tom
Green?
Yeah,
and he's doing, like,
movie?
A weird-ass Tom Green shtick that totally tonally does not mesh with the rest of the movie.
But there's a lot of, like, weird special effects. There's a scene where we're supposed to believe that Cameron Diaz is a man because they put her in a wig and change her contacts and give her a mustache. And there's a scene where LL Cool J dives out of a plane with, like, this bomb suspect, and then he just takes off his mask and happens to be Drew Barrymore, and it was so shticky, and I understand that it's a popcorn movie, but I did not care for it.
I liked it. I like it. It's goofy. It's over the top.
So, Josh, what are our movies for next week?
Okay, so we rolled.
What did we roll?
Nine. So I got 1982, and you got 1997. So I got E.T., the extraterrestrial, and you got. You don't like E.T.?
No.
What the fuck is wrong with you? No, seriously, what the fuck is wrong with you?
I did not care for it.
Well, fuck you.
It and insists you have,
upon
itself.
But you love our next movie.
It insists upon itself, Josh. And we'll talk about this next week.
Kate,
but,
and then Kate got...
Star Trek...
First Contact.
Is it Star Trek The Next Generation?
No, it's
Star Trek: First Contact, which is one of my favorite movies of all time.
It is the... It has the distinct advantage of not having a climax where three 60-year-old men wrestle on the top of a rock.
It's also, it has the distinction of being, like, the only Star Trek Next Generation movie attempt that was actually any good.
You liked Generations.
I like parts of Generations.
Do you like the part where three 60-year-old men wrestle on top of a rock?
I like the part where Picard meets Kirk, okay? Shut up. Fuck off.
Okay, let's go make another drink.
Okay.
You have to give it a name. It won't let you just
For a second, I thought it was from Bartleby the Scrivener. Like, someone had found our podcast and was like...
And then, like, looking for things about Bartleby the Scrivener.
And was just like, no, it's... You've taken my name.
If you have a name. I'm a name man.
It's really weird how your Daniel Plainview impersonation is really eerily similar to your John Huston. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, we haven't talked about that on the show, have we?
What?
Fucking Danny Huston on American Horror Story this week. No. So if anybody's watching American Horror Story.
Which I fully recommend. Yeah. I think we both do.
I watch it if you've got like an hour of your life and you're like completely successful and rich and won't hate yourself for wasting an hour of your life. I hated myself for productively spent hours. But Danny Huston is on it now, and he's an axe murderer, and like this is the first time I've ever
from
seen something
1919 or something.
Yeah. This is the first time I've ever seen something though with Danny Huston in it. Danny Huston, son of John Huston, in which he actually sounds like John Huston. And it was weird because he was having sex with Jessica Lange.
Well, he was talking Jessica Lange, like, he was seducing
talking
her.
Talking filthy talk, but then he started to sound like John Huston. So it was kind of creepy. I want to make you feel good.
It didn't help that while we were watching this, Josh kept repeating the lines in his John Huston voice as opposed to the one that was actually on the screen.
I've loved you for a long time.
Oh my god. Is that why you wanted to kiss me? Oh, it was really weird.
But don't you agree, though, that like he actually started sounding creepily like John Huston at certain points?
Yeah, especially how John Huston was in the fifth Planet of the Apes movie.
It all comes back to Planet of the Apes. This is one of the greatest directors in the history of cinema, and all you attach to him is the fact that he was the narrator of the fifth Planet of the Apes
That's
movie.
Not all I attach to
It's like
to
saying,
him.
Oh, right, Orson Welles, the guy who sold the shitty wine and did that movie about Nostradamus. So, hey, we got a letter to the editor.
We did get a letter to the editor. Hi, Amber.
Amber from Amber. By the way, I'm thinking of calling Amber Amber Riff Randall, because she's our first letter writer, so that makes her our number one fan, like Riff Randall from Rock and Roll High School.
All right, so are we going to read the whole thing?
Yeah, you got to read the whole letter.
So, okay, we're going to read a letter from Amber.
Amber, by the way, listeners, has saved you from us scouring Craigslist or other newspapers for a letter to the editor, because we have an actual letter. So
okay,
Kate will take it away.
From Amber, subject, rambled garbage to the editor. Hello, not Kate and not Josh. I just listened to all 20 episodes in like a week. And so it seems like you guys have been pestering me specifically several times daily for mail. So fine, here you go.
Which is true, we have.
Yeah, it's true. And also, I have been drinking there.
Which also we have.
Yes, we have. So, Amber, if I muddle your words and mar your words, I'm sorry. I'm reading it from a phone. I've immediately excused everything I say and all the extra / missing punctuation.
Missing?
Missing
well,
punctuation.
You have had some
cocktails. Glad I did that.
You've
up top.
Had cocktails.
I've had some cocktails. Okay, sorry. If you guys bring back Explain It To Me, I'd really love an explanation of Cockney rhyming slang, because it actually makes no sense at all. None.
No.
You say whatever words you want, and then another word that rhymes with the word you actually mean? What? A nice try, Alfie. That can't be real. Starred. Unless that's too much of a thing that requires actual literal explaining, in which case you can explain Chevy Chase. Legitimate.
I can handle both of those.
Legitimate inquiry, Amber. Drink recommendation. Hot toddy. I'm drinking one right now. Yum. Whiskey. It's cold in Buffalo. Toddies, Todds are old-timey medicine. So my backup suggestion is cough syrup. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to say, Amber, you are ahead of the times, because I was actually planning to do
December. I had pitched mulled wine, and Kate had said, I know, and Kate had said, let's do hot toddies instead.
Well, we could do both.
I'd be like, enough about your
isn't...
dating scene.
Oh, I'm so alone. All right, here are things I write down for you to talk about.
You've got hot toddy.
Guilty pleasures, specifically of pop culture and media. Or if that whole idea is bunk, and why. And if you think it's bunk, you're wrong. Because, Maroon 5, I agree with you. Weird things you did or thought when you were a kid. I once overheard an interview of Meryl Streep by Phil Donahue that apple juice had the same ingredients as rocket fuel. And so I was convinced if I kept drinking it...
Same ingredients as what?
Rocket fuel.
Damn.
If I was convinced if I kept drinking it, I would launch into space from my backyard. I was probably 3... Internet confirms this interview happened, but is conspiratorially vague. Surely you two can do better than that. And then I wrote down Bechdel test re sucker punch, as though that would be a great thing to discuss further about. Oh, Lord. Oh, and please talk more about America's Next Top Model double X2O boys in the house.
2-0.
The singing of the theme song in the last episode was an unfair teaser to those of us who have live texted our sisters about the show so much that our phone now autotypes no, just from a capital letter N being. Also, no one addressed why double X is a set of female...
You were the first person to...
The double X is a set of female chromosomes, so why were there boys in the house exactly? Who was fact-checking the show? Okay, so there you go. I pretty much planned your next 20 episodes, and you're sincerely welcome. We thank you for it, Amber. I just reread this email and I'm going to send it anyway. And then I'm going to copy and paste. This is an iTunes review. Did we actually, did it actually show up on
iTunes? It hasn't showed up on iTunes yet. But you
Amber.
Know, whatever.
I'm just kidding. Amber, thank you.
Thank you very much, Amber Riff Randall.
Yes. Because you asked for it, I am a one-woman monkey's paw. Oh my god, paw. Paw Patrol, more of that, and I'm done. Amber, P.S. I should mention that I genuinely like listening to your podcast as a thing to enjoy, and not just an abstract thing to send emails to. Please keep drinking and talking for many episodes to come.
Well, you know, Paw Patrol actually sort of relented on letting little Sally Troll date the orc
Susie.
Across...
Susie
Troll.
Susie.
Date the orc across the street.
Really?
But then, well, did you not see the episode?
After that, when
the orc across the street, Zach Orc, his band...
Is that with a K?
Yeah.
Zach.
Right. Zach and the Orcs. Because they were going to be honest.
Yeah.
They were in the band contest. And what are you looking at me like I'm mad?
I'm laughing. And I'm suppressing the laughter.
You're mad at me. So, but then anyhow, so Paw Patrol's troll boss, who found out that Paw Patrol was a judge in the band competition, was really leaning on him to say, hey, you know, we can't let an orc band win this contest. Because never in the history of Trollville... has there been an orc winner of the Battle of the Bands contest?
Is that where they live? It's not Trollington?
No. No. Trollington is across the river.
Oh, okay. No. Ooh, those dirty Trollington.
Yeah, they're skeezy. It's a lot blue collar. A lot more blue collar. We might have like our blue collar spinoff. Our Roseanne of the Trolls.
I'm pretty sure Paw Patrol is pretty blue collar.
He does.
He works as a...
lifter. You know, a crane lifter.
I thought we said that he was a...
Stamps Tool and Die?
A toll...
Right, up in the toll booth, right.
Toll booth operator.
He does work in the toll booth.
Sorry, we've had a lot of the champagne.
So, but his boss, seriously though, come on, man. His boss at the Transit Authority didn't want him to let the orc band win, so he was torn in his loyalties between Sally Troll and Zach Orc, who is fast becoming a member of the family with his crazy catchphrases and his devil-may-care attitude. And, you know, he doesn't take...
And his backward hat.
He doesn't take any guff. Rides a BMX. Doesn't take any guff. Might have a little lightning bolt on his face, like Chuck Cunningham.
Oh,
nobody cares.
No.
But so he's torn because his boss is like, if you are not going to get that big promotion if you let that orc band win in Battle of the Bands. And that's our cliffhanger.
And next week we will continue.
Who knows what's going to happen on Paw Patrol?
Paw Patrol.
He's the papa of the trolls.
Talking about guilty pleasures.
Do you want to take guilty pleasures? Was that the first thing? Because there's a lot of other things in that letter I wanted to hit.
Okay.
Seriously, Amber Riff Randall, this letter, you thought it was going to be 20 episodes. You're getting it all in a while.
Oh, no. If you guys bring back Explain It to Me, I'd love an explanation of Cockney rhyming slang.
Yeah, so Cockney rhyming slang.
And or Chevy
So Chase. Here's the thing about Cockney rhyming slang. And Kate's going to tell me that I'm full of shit on this one. I'm pretty sure Cockney rhyming slang doesn't exist. That it was a mass mental delusion perpetrated by Michael Caine, who the world knows that he's a great hypnomancer, that the reason that he took the part in the Batman movies, because, you know, he's Michael Caine. You know, he can do shitty movies all day long. He doesn't have to go, like, on location and work for 90 days on a big, hard action movie set. Why would you do that?
Yeah.
But there were subliminal hypnomancy waves that convinced everyone that Cockney rhyming slang was a thing, like, retroactively in their brains in the past. And it was all because Michael Caine, like Gary Oldman, as we've discussed in the past, is a white supremacist. And he wanted to take rap away from the black man and reclaim it for the Cockneys. And I think it's despicable. Michael Caine, you and Gary Oldman should be fucking ashamed of yourselves.
I don't understand what... Okay, I missed this. When did we talk about Cockney rhyming slang on the show?
We didn't. She wants to know about it because...
But I don't understand what that is,
because we've talked about... You don't know what Cockney rhyming slang is?
No.
Seriously, you have no idea. It's okay, so Cockney rhyming slang is like they take a word like... I'm going to talk about your wife, but they call it your trouble and strife, but then they call it your trouble. Say, oh, how's your trouble? And they have, like, words like that where they take, like, two words. It's like if you had, you know.
Isn't that just a form of slang then?
No, it's strictly Cockney rhyming slang because they take the thing, it's a two-word phrase, like trouble and strife, right? And then they cut the word that actually rhymes with the thing off and then just use the word trouble. It makes no fucking sense. So then, like, how's your trouble? Or like, you know, there's...
Again, that's just slang.
But it's specifically Cockney rhyming slang. I'm telling you. You have no... My God, you are so young. Or maybe you're immune to hypnomancy. That may very well be the case that Michael Caine brainwaves don't actually work. Let me ask you this. Did Jaws 4 The Revenge make sense to you?
No.
Well, then you're like the rest of us. But no. So, I don't know.
Yes, it made perfect sense. I don't know.
Cockney rhyming slang is weird, and you're absolutely right, Amber Riff Randall.
I think it's just slang.
No. Okay, so slang is just you know, jargon that is identifiably attached to a group. So it is a slang, but it is a specific kind of slang in which you structure a rhyme around a two-word pattern and then leave off the second word, which is the word that rhymes with it.
It's tricky.
To rock a rhyme?
Yeah.
To rock a rhyme that is roughly on time?
It's tricky.
It is tricky.
Yeah.
So, Amber, I'm 100% with you. That it is pasty white men's attempt to use demonic magic to steal credit for rap from the black man. Not unlike Elvis Presley. So Michael Caine is really the Elvis Presley of rap.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Sir Michael Caine.
No.
You know what? He was only supposed to blow the bloody doors off.
Don't. Look, I think Michael Caine should be added to that list of topics that we can't talk about on the show anymore.
He's the topic that we talk about all the time, like Prince and Eddie Murphy.
That's what I'm saying. We can't talk about like that and The Postman and like LL Cool J. We just need to add them to like a blacklist.
No. No. Michael Caine is on the list of things that we always talk about because we have to expose the racist hypnomancy campaign of Michael Caine and Gary Oldman.
All right, moving on.
Okay, what was the next thing that we talked about?
Chevy Chase.
Chevy Chase? It's from GM's not-so-golden era of the late 70s.
Yeah, well.
You know, Chevy Chase.
You're a child of his time.
I am. And, you know, the first movie that I watched more than any other movie was Fletch. And it was, here's the thing, you know, Bill Murray didn't make a lot of movies. And, you know, I like him. He's appealing. And he has the same sort of shtick of sort of being snarky in early 80s and being the sort of guy who knows shit. But, you know, unlike Bill Murray, I don't think his work has stood up. Didn't choose the best projects. Although Bill Murray never didn't actually exactly choose the best projects. And in recent years hasn't really, how do I put this? Whereas Bill Murray has embraced the vision of filmmakers and creative people younger than him.
Mm-hmm.
Chevy Chase has sort of grown into the old man role.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is why, you know, Dan Harmon actually wanted Bill Murray to be Jeff Winger's dad on Community.
Really?
Yeah, that's why he was so frustrated by season 4 of Community. They cast James Brolin as Winger's dad. Because Winger is named after Bill Murray's character in Stripes.
Right.
So he had wanted to cast Bill Murray as Joel McHale's dad in a sort of, again, it's sort of that dynamic interplay of
like
Chevy
ultra,
Chase and Bill
Murray. Right.
It's very Community and meta. So that's Chevy Chase. Again, you know, when you're a kid and it's 1985 and you're sort of a hyperverbal kid, looking at people like Bill Murray and Chevy Chase was the one thing that kept me going is sort of, hey, eventually girls will like that I can talk about things and make a reference to Hopalong Cassidy and they'll find it funny. Which, you know, hasn't worked yet, but I hold out hope.
I've never found Chevy Chase funny.
Have you seen Fletch?
No.
Fletch is very funny.
I've never found him funny, and I realize this is because a lot of the comedy that he pioneered was already, like, circumstance, just kind of, like, run old hat by the time.
Well, it's right on that. Here's the problem. It's right on that edge. It's right on that edge of where you, early 80s into the 90s sensibility, where you move over the edge from being too cool for school into just irritatingly unfunny.
Yeah.
Okay? And it's David Letterman sort of was the apex of that line. And basically, once you move, it's like the Mendoza line in baseball where you go south of 200. When you go north of the Letterman line, you're just irritatingly snarky. Like, you're just mean and, mean than you are funny.
I wouldn't say that he's mean. He's just smug.
Right. Well, more
sense.
Smug than you are funny.
Like,
that's what
I'm way funnier than this project is letting me be, so fuck it, you know?
Right. Like, too good for what you're doing when, you know, people have paid a lot of money to sort of make this thing that you're in.
Exactly.
Right. No, and again, that's why it sort of grates after a while, especially when we're looking at something like Deal of the Century, which we looked at last week, where it's like a project that's completely unsuited to his abilities, and yet they sort of tell him, go be Chevy Chase.
I will say that is one of the only movies I have slightly chuckled at with him in it, like being like...
But yeah, I mean, that's where it comes from. And I think a lot of his stuff doesn't date well, but I think his good stuff does. Again,
right.
I watched Fletch so many times. Okay, what's next? So after Chevy Chase, what was on that? Guilty Pleasures?
Guilty Pleasures.
Okay, so until very recently, I would have said, I do not at all believe in Guilty Pleasures. I think if you enjoy something, you should say you enjoy it and defend it. However, there's a lot of things that I enjoy that I will not talk about.
Like what?
Fucking video games. I don't ever talk about video games on this show or to my parents or anything. Because you know why? It's something that, like, shameful, pasty white people do.
You are a pasty white person.
No. I am a tall, rugged, tan man.
With a
resplendent beard who exudes musk.
It's true. Like, anytime Josh walks into the room,
where the fuck is that musk coming from?
It's like
from?
An air freshener just went off that
Jovan
has this...
musk.
That has this, like, air of Josh. There's this air that Josh just fought a bear and then like put on a plaid shirt and then punched the brawny guy in the face.
It's like I'm ripping off my clothes, but it's somehow not enough to satisfy the musk.
He's also whittling for some reason.
I do. Whittling. But you know what? I whittle with my fingers because fuck knives.
He's whittling with one hand while punching a bear in the face with the other.
In order to get a tooth that I'm then going to whittle with that other hand and then grab another bear. So it's like an assembly line
and
of bears and tooths.
Know how he whittles with one hand, but he does it. It's amazing.
It's my very sharp thumb.
He's on the brawny packages, you guys.
I am that guy.
He is the brawny guy.
I am. I'm the guy. You know what? I'm the brawny guy before they wussed him up and took his mustache away. Because, you know, the new brawny guy has
and
no
Josh
mustache.
And Josh is fighting the new brawny guy
with
his
with the same hand. No. Here's what I've done. I have shoved him down the gullet of the bear that I am fighting so that when I punch the bear, I am also punching the new brawny guy at the same time while still whittling the bear tooth with my left hand.
And then also the Old Spice theme is playing very softly in the background.
So what was next? No, but
and Duran Duran's "Hungry Like a Wolf" is also there somewhere.
You said that. That's my. You said that because you know that's one of my karaoke songs.
Well, that and also you know there was a Bruce Campbell Old Spice commercial where.
But you know that's one of my karaoke songs.
Yeah,
you've seen me do that in Rock Band.
No, I know. We should play Rock Band later.
Yeah, we gotta get it all out of the show.
All right. Guilty pleasures.
Also, what does "smell like a sound" mean? It's like no, seriously. Like someone who smells like a sound is like smelling like rotten garbage and expired fish.
You know what
fish.
I've always thought is like a sound, like the body of water.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, if you, it's like, I smell like the docks. It's like, that's disgusting. Seriously, I smell like the harbor. No,
I smell like a lagoon.
Right. What? No, seriously. What is it? So you're
saying
he smells like a sound, like the noise, like it's a metaphor.
I don't know.
No, seriously. Like you don't know. Like, because I always thought like
I'm sorry,
smell like
I'm not in the head of the guy who wrote that song that could tell you.
Simon Le Bon.
Who could tell you what the fuck
great
it means?
I'm on the hunt. Is that your shirt? Or, I mean, your glass?
Yes.
I'm on the hunt. I'm after you. Okay, what's next?
We're still talking about guilty pleasures.
No, but, yeah, I don't, you know, until recently I wouldn't have said, you know, if you'd like something, defend it. Hey, you know what? I enjoy playing video games. I'm not proud of it. I don't like to talk about it to my parents, but since I'm not talking to my dad anyway, fuck it. I occasionally like to play some video games.
Okay, next up is...
But that's the only thing... Wait, that's the only thing that comes close to guilty pleasures for me. What do you have that's guilty pleasures? That you like feel like you cannot justify enjoying?
I can justify enjoying a lot of different things.
So then you don't believe in guilty pleasures.
I do believe in guilty pleasures. I'm just, off the top of my head, I can't think of anything that is a particularly guilty pleasure except for the stuff that Josh... Because I genuinely like the shit that I like, you know? Like
you will... Be like, I love fucking hobo corpses.
Exactly.
All damn day.
Yes, so hairy.
Like, literally, she is fucking a hobo corpse right now. It was. They called him Canine Jethro and his golden retriever sidekick, Sparky. Canine Jethro and Sparky. This fall on ABC.
Am I the chick from American Horror Story?
Oh my god, with her death vagina.
It's a death vagina.
Have we talked about that?
No.
About how, like you refuse to admit that show is, like, a creepy gay man's psyche writ large.
Before you start, can I just suggest that we split Amber's letter until, like, next week?
So next week, we talk about Meryl Streep and the Alar scandal, Bechdel test as applies to Sucker Punch, a movie which I've only seen, like, half of.
I've never seen it, but I know that one of my friends is really ridiculously fond of it, and everything I've ever seen about it.
Does your friend, like, masturbating a lot?
Probably. So the point is, I've only known one person who really loves the movie, and everything else that I've ever read has been like, God, this thing is fucking horrible and
rapey. I like
Jenna
Malone, and I feel weird that she's in it, because I like her a lot.
Well, I like a lot of the actresses in it, and the actress, John Hamm, is in it. And I'm like, why, John Hamm? Why?
Yeah, you know? Yeah. So Amber Riff Randall, the rest of your note is gonna have to move to next week.
This podcast brought to you by the champagne cocktail, which apparently will put you on your ass.
Well, because here's the problem: it's like a highball, right?
Yeah.
But instead of it being soda water, it's wine. So you drink it.
Champagne.
Right, but what I'm saying is that you drink it thinking, you know, oh, well, you know, there's a little bit of liquor, and then the rest of it is, you know, the bubbly, the stuff that doesn't. But it's, you know, the champagne sneaks up on you, and that's where the shit comes from. I don't understand how you're ever not up to watch something that has Terrence Stamp in it. Like, I would literally, if Terrence Stamp was doing Paw Patrol, by the way, it's a little known fact that Terrence Stamp actually does the voice for Paw Patrol.
I thought it was John Goodman. We said it was John Goodman.
No, he looks like John Goodman. But Terrence Stamp does the voice. No, okay. Terrence Stamp does the voice for the boss.
Okay.
At the factory.
All right, all right.
John Goodman is Paw Patrol. Terrence Stamp is Victor Von Tusk, which is his boss. Well, of course, because the trolls run society. That's why the orcs are in such shitty shape. But yeah, the trolls run society. Uh-huh. Terrence Stamp is at the top.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the transit authority,
right,
where John Goodman / Paw Patrol works.
Yes, exactly.
And for some reason that is important to the transit authority that we don't know yet, the outcomes of the Battle of the Bands are important.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, you want to do recommendations?
Sure.
Okay, Kate, you go first.
I'm going to recommend, it's not a podcast really, I guess it's like a YouTube video series, kind of like a podcast. Half in the Bag, which is from the guys at Red Letter Media, which some of you may be familiar with internet celebrity Harry Plinkett, who does a lot of reviews of movies, most famously the Star Wars prequels. In this Half in the Bag, they watch movies that have come out recently and discuss them, and much like us, I think that it...
Yeah, I was going to say, so your recommendation is a different, more established, better produced show where people have too many drinks and talk about movies. Thanks, Kate.
Fine. I think it's funny. Josh apparently is going to be snarky. Josh, what's your recommendation?
My recommendation is watching Death Wish 3 this week made me think about movies that simultaneously had a satisfying action/thriller/caper plot structure, yet also managed to address issues of urban decay. And I lighted on the movie Fresh from 1994. It's a movie about a kid who's sort of caught between different sides in a warring neighborhood war over drugs and money. And it's simultaneously a very interesting and intricate caper movie, sort of reminiscent of Yojimbo or Fistful of Dollars, and also a mid-90s urban decay movie that also has a lot of great old-school rap. I highly recommend it. It has, among other people, it has Samuel L. Jackson and any number of other people in it. And I really, really enjoy it. It's a movie that sort of, for some reason, drifted off the radar. And when I saw it back in the 90s, I thought this was going to be one of those movies that people latched onto as a 90s movie, but they didn't. But I highly recommend it. It's called Fresh. And it's available on Amazon Instant, Amazon Prime streaming. So
all right.
Kate's recommendation is Half in the Bag from the guys at Red Letter Media, which is wonderful. I made fun of her, but it is a wonderful show. You can get them all the episodes on YouTube. Just search for Red Letter Media.
The difference between them and us is that you can actually see them when they're getting drunk and talking about movies.
Right, but there's not a soul on earth that wants to see me get loaded. Besides you and my wife.
I do.
And my recommendation is 1994's Fresh, which is available on Amazon Prime streaming. So gosh darn it, the champagne cocktail.
Oh
wow.
Oh my God, yes.
I did not think that anything that had the word champagne in it, first of all, because it has that GN thing, which, like, let's be honest, any word with the...
Champagne.
It's pronounced, yeah.
All right.
Should we end the show before I dig a deeper hole?
Fine.
All right. So, as always, we've enjoyed it. Oh, hey. So, if you want to be like Amber Refrandall and communicate with us, you can reach us at pntcast@gmail.com. We're on Facebook if you search for Prefer Not To. We're on Twitter at PNTcast. Our website is pntcast.wordpress.com, and our Tumblr is pntcast.tumblr.com. There's a theme there. I enjoyed spending some time with you, Kate. As always, you are my friend. I enjoyed spending
time
with you.
You say that like we don't spend time again. You say that like we don't spend time together all the
time. But I'm always thankful for the time that I get to spend with you. I hope that you guys will forgive us this drunken rambling and spend some time with us next week.
Depending on the editing, Josh will fix it, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, I edit it. I edit most of the really horrible drunken slurred speech out. Most of that's from you.
All right, so for Josh, I'm Kate.
And for Kate, I'm Josh. Please spend some time with us again next week. We really enjoyed doing this show for you.
Apparently a little bit too much. Anyway, thank you for listening.